Welcome to this introduction to The Three Musketeers, written by Alexandre Dumas, now adapted and directed by Teresa Heskins for the New Vic Theatre. I'm Mim Bernard, and together with Brenda Hennessy, we'll be audio describing the show on Saturday the 21st of December and Saturday the 18th of January at 2:15 p.m. We will let you know the time of the touch tours and will meet you at box office a few minutes beforehand. The first half of the show lasts for 55 minutes, the second half for 50 minutes with a 20-minute interval. The New Vic brochure tells us a spirited country boy arrives in the big city with big dreams. A streetwise city girl spies her chance to steal the greatest prize of all. D'Artagnan arrives in Paris with hopes of joining the Royal Guard. He soon discovers he'll need all his courage to help the musketeers defeat a cunning secret agent and their villainous employer. Our show is not meant to be an accurate period drama. Rather, the inspiration for the design of the set and the costumes comes from blending swashbuckling stories and legendary figures like Robin Hood, medieval knights, cowboys and pirates, with more modern influences such as the Mad Max films and clothes worn by bikers. It's a story about friendship, courage and doing what is right. It's a fast-paced, epic action-adventure, filled with sword fighting, of course, music and lots of fun. If you've not been to the New Vic Theatre before, here is some information about the auditorium. The auditorium is a theatre in the round, with tiered purple seats surrounding a 10-metre diameter circular stage. The stage floor accommodates a number of concealed openings called traps, through which actors, props and scenery can be brought on and off stage. Three evenly spaced tunnel-like entrances lead up onto the stage. Two are used by actors and the audience, and the third, slightly larger main entrance, is used by actors and production staff. Thinking of a clock face, if the main entrance is at 12 o'clock, the other two entrances are at 4 and 8 o'clock. During the performance, we will call the 4 o'clock entrance the right entrance, and the 8 o'clock entrance the left entrance. By the main entrance at 1 o'clock, and by the left entrance at 9 o'clock, there is a section of acting space we call a notch. Behind the seating is a curved pathway, known as the promenade. Five sets of aisle steps lead down from it to the stage. The promenade and aisles are used by both audience and actors. In the aisles, at the end of each row of seats, there are small handrails to assist ascent or descent. Above the promenade, a balcony houses two rows of seats and is edged with a safety barrier. Fixed high above the stage is a large lighting rig, complete with walkways known as the grid. Props may be stowed or suspended from here. Now for the set. New Vic set designer Laura Wilstead creates the city streets, the Fleur-de-Lis Inn, the palace steps, the palace interior and much, much more for this action-packed show. Briefly, before we walk the city streets, we visit two locations. A farm with a wooden wheelbarrow and pitchfork and a grand house scrubbed clean of a silver knife from a silver tray. The stage floor is the city streets, not paved with gold but with large, square, rusty aluminium tiles. Alternate tiles are stenciled with a pattern resembling Parisian decorative manhole covers. And of course, a manhole cover can be lifted up. Lights projected across the floor help change the mood and locations. For example, there's a dramatic black and gold checkerboard pattern as we take our seats. A chilling blue light at night time, or dappled green leaf shapes to transform the space into a park. The promenade and aisles also feature as the streets and as the palace walls. At the top of each aisle, a Victorian-style street lamp hangs from the balcony. The city guard career down the aisles carrying flaming torches when D'Artagnan's warning rattle sounds. The main entrance, not in service for this show, is hidden beneath a palatial staircase. The risers are made of metal grills. This allows internal lights to shine out, creating a floating staircase effect. At street level, the first four rusty steps fan out to cover one third of the stage. Then, from the fourth step upwards, a flight of narrower steps nestles between the two banks of seats on either side of the hidden main entrance. And as the steps near the palace doors, set at promenade level, the rust is left behind. The higher steps gleam, and three arched double doors stand majestically between stone pillars. Each wrought iron door is studded and has three panels, each panel embellished with a circular gold motif. As if on sentry duty, on either side of the doors, golden urns planted with golden ferns stand on golden plinths. Back at floor level, the right entrance has a waist-high aluminium barn door, fastened back for most of the show. From the notch by the left entrance, right round to the staircase, the front row seats have been removed, as has the second row of seats behind the notch itself. A wall of aluminium now separates the audience from the stage floor. In this space, the interior of the Fleur-de-Lis Inn is ingeniously secreted. In Act II, Porthos falls against the notch wall. Deftly and at speed, he flips back a hinged horizontal section at the top and flips forward a front vertical section to reveal a shelf stacked with tankards, flagons and barrels. He then pulls out another concertinaed layer, flipping part of it up and over to form the bar counter. Voila! Oh, and from the grid above, a cartwheel chandelier set with eight candles lowers to illuminate the inn. A Fleur-de-Lis pub sign hangs above an imagined door, and at floor level, a trap operates to reveal a bench, two floor tiles in length. All is neatly stowed away when we visit the Queen's Chamber. There, a three-floor tile seat is brought up through a trap. The Queen sits as four dressmakers parade with their mannequins set on casters. Above, a metal, dome-shaped octagonal cupola hangs below the grid. Later, at the masquerade ball, the notch is set with three very large golden urns planted with golden ferns on golden plinths, and more bling. Golden shot glasses and a golden goblet fit for a king are served from a golden tray. Strings of fairy lights festoon the roof space. Swags of fairy lights decorate the balcony barrier, and more hang beneath the balcony against the auditorium walls. Not a hint of rust at the palace. At the climax of the show, a huge white sailcloth unfurls from the balcony above the staircase. Printed on the banner is the musketeer's motif, consisting of four cross swords and a fleur-de-lis within a golden circle. Now to describe the characters and costumes. With a 16-strong cast and multiple characters, we concentrate our descriptions on the nine main characters, providing only brief overviews of the others. If you're familiar with the Alexandre Dumas tale, you'll know that the names of the titular three musketeers, Porthos, Athos, and Aramis, are all pseudonyms. As firm friends and members of the Royal Guard, they dress predominantly in shades of blue. They wear denim biker jeans, leathers, and dusky blue fighting capes embossed with a combined fleur-de-lis and three-sword motif. Leather baldrics support their rapiers, which have ornate hilts. That said, each musketeer puts his own individual stamp on his outfit. Vain, loud, and indiscreet Porthos, described by Dumas as a giant of a man, is broad-shouldered, dark-haired, and with a well-manicured full beard. When we first encounter him, he is resplendent in his new diamond-patterned blue-green doublet over a white linen shirt. Tucked in his belt is a pair of bright blue calfskin gauntlets. A pale blue-grey fringed silk scarf hangs at his right hip. fancy silver cowboy boots, a blue neckerchief, and a black leather wide-brimmed hat trimmed with a silver chain and peacock feather add the finishing touches to his appearance. Later, in Act Two, he attempts to disguise himself in a splendid, full-length, tiered and hooded teal velvet cloak with, rather incongruously, a pair of sunglasses. Later still, he is swathed in dirty, smelly rags when he emerges from the maze of tunnels beneath the palace. At the masquerade ball, he is disguised as a water nymph. His back is covered in gold and sea-green segmented plates like a lobster, his front draped in rippling waterfall silks and pearls in blue and gold. He also wears a coral crown and gold mask. Noble and gallant Athos is much more reserved in both look and manner. Strongly built, shaven-headed and with designer stubble, he favours shades of blue-grey. He wears a striped grey and white shirt under his grey leather waistcoat and a zip-up dark green leather jacket. His brown leather accessories include a wide-brimmed hat, very large gauntlets and brown buckled leather gaiters and ankle boots. Aramis is slighter in build than Athos, with wavy, light brown shoulder-length hair, partially tied in a topknot, and a neatly trimmed short beard. Agile, astute, and mild-mannered, he fancies himself as a master of disguise. Under his brown leather double waistcoat, he wears a blue denim shirt, laced at the neck and with the sleeves rolled up to the elbows. Sturdy, buckled brown ankle boots, a brown leather hat, gauntlets, and a dagger at his right hip complete his outfit. Aramis adopts three disguises: as an old man in a long grey belted coat, soft hat with attached grey hair and wire-rimmed glasses; as a washerwoman wearing a ragged grey skirt, pink and cream striped apron, plum-coloured woollen shawl and matching mob cap; and as one of the four court dressmakers in a baggy, calf-length, button-through white smock with a big floppy collar. His white cap sports a large white ostrich feather. A skilled swordsman since young, impetuous country boy D'Artagnan is determined to become a musketeer. He is slim, bright-eyed, and has black, tightly curled shoulder-length hair, parted down the middle, as well as a neatly trimmed beard and moustache. His shabby clothes reflect his lower status. Over a stone-coloured long-sleeved T-shirt, he has a grubby, off-white, short-sleeved hoodie laced at the neck. This is worn over brown baggy trousers tucked into soft brown lace-up ankle boots. He carries an old broadsword in his sword belt. A grey woollen waistcoat, grey cap, and fingerless tan suede gloves contrast markedly with the dashing musketeers. Over the course of the story, D'Artagnan's costume gradually transforms. He progressively adds a smart leather jacket and denim biker jeans, brown leather gauntlets, black biker boots, and a wide-brimmed brown leather hat. Emulating Aramis, he even ties his hair back into a topknot. And towards the end, he is presented with his musketeer's dusky blue fighting cape. At the ball, he wears a gold mask and is wrapped in an ankle-length, caramel-coloured hooded cape. Accompanying D'Artagnan on his arrival in Paris is his faithful old shire horse, Buttercup. Constructed of rusty silver metal and wire, the life-size horse's head and neck is manipulated and voiced by one of the cast. Sporting a long, luscious King Charles wig and goatee beard, the King is a flamboyant character. Of medium height and demonstrative with his hands, he walks with mincing steps. His shiny leather trousers, tucked into calf-length cowboy boots, have a large gold patch on each thigh, matching his close-fitting leather doublet. The flouncy long cuffs of his white shirt flop about, and at his neck is a large gold bow. At the ball, the king dresses as the sun god. His wig is now gold and he wears a big gold ring. Gold trousers are tucked into knee-high, Cuban-heeled gold boots, while strips of gold and copper fabric hang on a gladiator-style skirt and from his shoulders. In the centre of his breastplate, worn over a balloon-sleeved shirt, is a sun god motif. A sun god mask covers most of his face. Five sun rays protrude from the top. Golden also describes the queen's magnificent clothes. Arriving on the scene in a rose gold crinoline dress, its balloon sleeves are taken in at the elbows and encased by frames. Her medium length bobbed brown hair is tucked under a thin golden hairnet. She's splendidly bejewelled with a diamond tiara and an immense heavy necklace of rows of mirror diamonds fills the open neckline of her dress. Tall and with a smooth complexion, she wears bold red lipstick, a wedding ring and a large diamond ring. At the ball, the queen's crinoline dress is overlain with an old gold translucent layer, patterned with a subtle net of squares and with voluminous sleeves. The skirt is open at the front, revealing a golden skirt frame over a gold underskirt and glittery high-heeled cowboy boots. A very large collar covers the neckline of her dress, and a shiny metallic gold train stretches from her waist down the entire length of the palace steps. She wears an exaggerated bright gold bobbed wig and a golden filigree eye mask. The Queen's lady-in-waiting and her confidant is Constance. Petite and of a gentle disposition, she too has a fresh complexion, red lipstick and dark brown hair, hers taken back into a small bun. She wears a square-necked cinnamon brown bodice and matching mid-calf skirt over a skirt frame. Her long-sleeved white blouse has a large open stand-up collar. She has camel-coloured laced shoes and a white soft cotton bonnet. When out for a picnic, carrying a basket of food and a white parasol, she wears a white crownless sun hat. D'Artagnan refers to the city girl he meets in Paris as a Cockney sparrow. Later, when a noble woman, he calls her Milady. Scheming, feisty and strong, she has bright auburn hair tightly plaited and pinned on her head. At the beginning, Cockney Sparrow strides in with her bucket and brush, the sleeves of her cream blouse rolled up, ready to scrub the floor. She wears a dirty, thinly striped cream apron over her khaki dress, a brown belt and brown laced boots. During the show, she disguises herself as both the Queen and Constance. As Milady, she deliberately dresses in the same outfit as Constance, but in olive green. At times, they both wear a floor-length, very full, hooded, cinnamon-coloured velvet cape. So as not to spoil the story, we won't say when or how it's worn. The final main character is the Cardinal. He is officious and power-seeking, although the Queen playfully calls him Cardi Wardi. His short brown hair is combed back and he has a moustache and goatee beard. On his right index finger is a large sparkling ring. The collar and frilly cuffs of a white shirt can be seen beneath his floor-length scarlet vestment. On top, he wears a long black leather tunic belted at the waist. A bottom corner of the vestment is hitched up under the belt, revealing his black bucket-top biker boots. He also sports a short, circular red leather cape. At the ball, he puts on a plain golden mask with small devil's horns. Working for the Cardinal, the city guard are a motley crew, immediately identifiable by their red suedette fighting capes embossed with the city's crest of a sun and four keys. They wear dark grey biker jeans, jerkins, brown or black hats, sword belts and leather boots. Their captain is dressed similarly, but with a dark red leather jacket over his white linen shirt, black trousers, brown leather gauntlets, and black knee-high bucket-top leather boots. At the ball, he dons a scarlet and gold waistcoat, over which is a gold knee-length suedette fighting cape. During the story, we also encounter a collection of other minor characters, including D'Artagnan's father in a grubby shirt and waistcoat, woolly hat and knee-high boots, a housemaid wearing a brown pinafore dress over a white blouse and with a dark mob cap, a reporter interviewing the Queen, dressed in a brown overcoat and beret with a fringe scarf round his neck and a notebook and quill in his hand, the innkeeper of the Fleur-de-Lis tavern in an apron tied round his waist, and the dressmakers, all swathed in white button-through smocks. Finally, the entire cast appear in a variety of spectacular gold costumes and masks at the ball. That completes our introduction. Now listen on for the credits. The cast. Limar Moller plays D'Artagnan. Hadley Smith is Porthos. Louis J. Roane, Athos, and Thomas Dennis, Aramis. Emma Simmons plays the Queen. Gareth Cassidy is the King, as well as D'Artagnan's father and the innkeeper. Charlotte Price is Milady. Chloe Ragrag is Constance, and Perry Moore the Cardinal. Jack Elliot is the captain of the City Guard. The City Guards and the other characters are played by Harris Kane, Farrah Hughes, Erin Jackson, Stephen Louis, Erickson Mitchell, and Rhiannon Skerritt. The Creatives. The Three Musketeers has been adapted and directed by Teresa Heskins. Philip d'Orléans is the fight director and Beverly Norris Edmonds the movement director. Laura Wilstead designed the set and Liz Evans the costumes. Charles Balfour is the lighting designer, Daniela Beatty the projection designer, and Alex Day the sound designer. Matt Baker composed the music. We hope you enjoy the show.